Hank Mobley on tenor sax with his own composition, Dig Dis. It's from his 1960 album, Soul Station, featuring also Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Art Blakey on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. You know, as I was thinking about it, you see this combination quite a bit in jazz. The Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Art Blakey on drums. You see familiar names popping up all the time, and it gives you a hint about how difficult it was to make a living, actually, in the business. It was not easy to make a living, so people were kind of recycled all over the place and picked up gigs wherever they could, and these were master musicians. An interesting story behind the recurring names. I just thought about that. Well, President Trump yesterday announced his solution to America's immigration problem. It's called RAISE, R-A-I-S-E, which stands for Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment. It is a proposed piece of legislation proposed by U.S. Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas and David Perdue of Louisiana. And the whole thing is about ramping up deportations of illegal immigrants in the United States and looking to grant legal status to others based on merit. What that means, we'll get to in our discussion. But, you know, this is also in the self-assigned mission that President Trump has, which is obsessively to destroy any trace of Barack Obama. So even here, we see evidence of the continuing mission by Donald Trump. And in this regard, I mean, we can't say many glowing things about Barack Obama and immigration. In fact, he has been in the history books already, the deporter in chief from the time he took office to the time that he left. Barack Obama has deported more people than any president on record. Now, we do understand that immigration is a very, very important function in any society. I mean, you got to watch who is let in, and some of them are not worth letting in, so you have to invite them to leave. One way or the other, they got to leave a society. They have a pronounced and negative effect and impact on a society. And it is justifiable, I think, that societies would want not to increase the population with this kind of a profile. You're not really bringing anything good to the party. You're basically an undesirable citizen. And therefore, the larger society has a right, or the government has a right, I think, to make sure that you do not benefit by bringing your awful ways, your lack of education. You don't intend, in many cases, to contribute meaningfully. Many people have crimes they have not paid for wherever they're coming from. And many see immigration as a way to open up new landscapes for committing crimes. And the United States does have, comparatively speaking, a very generous offer to immigrants in terms of having a different opportunity than the one that you left behind, you know, to better yourself. But of course, like everything else, people abuse privileges. I mean, look at Donald Trump. Look at his sons. Look at his entire family. Look at Congress. They abuse privileges all the time. This is true in every society at practically every epoch. You find people, sometimes at the highest levels, absolutely abusing the privilege of leadership and the privilege of privilege. You know, they do really rotten things. And the reason, a large part of the reason anyway, is this idea that they are special and they do not have to obey laws. But now we see that governments, in return, are behaving like they don't have to obey laws. And so, while they have procedures in place to deal with issues such as illegal immigration, they ignore them. And they make up their own laws. And therefore, the way they conduct themselves with regard to immigration across the board is so undemocratic. It is so unnatural. It is so wrong. And that gives another boost. It gives a rationale for people who will break the law or who do break the law to continue to do so. But we must see this issue arising now in a particular light. We really should. It is not about the here and now. Everything has a context to it. And that is the question we ought to ask. What is the context of this surge, the sudden and urgent need to deal with illegal immigration? Well, some would say, as a perfectly plausible explanation, the times we live in demand it. We need to be assured, the citizens of any country need to be assured of their safety. They don't need to worry about the influx of undesirable people, people they say are coming from countries who have a vendetta against the United States for all kinds of reasons. And we have to be more conscious now about who comes into the country. That's a rationale. Another rationale is that if this goes unchecked or unaddressed, what you produce is a lopsided kind of citizenry, because some will enjoy privileges to which they're not entitled, while others pay the price. They are denied certain rights and privileges because, and this is the way the United States thinks, there's no such thing as unlimited anything. We have resources, and they ought to be allocated to the people who are citizens of this country and those who are allowed legally to enter. That's another explanation. A third explanation is that illegal immigration is lawlessness. And it flouts the natural inclination for all countries to have an orderly society. Because after all, people who come into the country illegally are making up their own laws. They're disrespecting the law. And we can't have a society where people make their own laws or obey laws they wish to obey and disobey laws that they ought to obey. But mostly it has to do with the power of the state to control its borders. Who comes in, who does not come in. These are some of the rationales that we've been presented with for a very, very long time. Except, even as they make these arguments, we have vivid examples of how the laws can be bent, even broken, to accommodate people who come in with the intent of breaking the law. There's no question about that. We have, for example, very recently, Jared Kushner's sister, who's also in the real estate business, they all are, in China, is promising people who buy real estate in the United States a great deal of assistance in getting special visas. So if you buy a condo for $500,000, we could help you get a visa that you ordinarily would not get. You see? So there are people who know how to break the law and do break the law. These people, one way or the other, enjoy special privileges. But they're not seen as lawbreakers. Neither they nor the people who help them, like Kushner's sister. It's, I think, an illegal transaction because it actually gives a privilege to someone because that person has money. And in exchange for money, you can be assured privileges that you don't really deserve. The protection of citizenship or permanent residence in the United States among them. But all that aside, these are bureaucratic details. The number one thing I want to talk about today, where this is concerned, is race. All along, in Trump's campaign, there was an alignment between illegal immigration and race and crime and a general downgrading of society, but most of all, the physical and psychological threat of immigration to good law-abiding white American citizens. This is the nefarious start of this whole argument. All the other things about we have to have order in our society, fine, I get all of that. But I want to open up the discussion today about this seldom discussed question. I have not seen that discussed anywhere. The implications are quite pronounced here. We can't avoid it. And yet we have managed to do so. Even now, as the president ramps up this newfangled bill in order to get extra powers to do certain things, it is informed by rank racism. How do we keep America white again? You know, they act as if immigration is something of a new phenomenon. It was fine because people who were immigrating or emigrating were, well, they weren't the best. They weren't from the best classes of people, but we can tolerate them because they're white. And with a little, you know, a little scrub here, a little shaping up there, some new clothes, eventually they'll fall in line with the expected and maintained racial patterns of the United States. Like Trump's father and grandfather. I read from a newspaper clipping, if you may recall, some time ago, that described Trump's grandfather, an immigrant from a corner of Germany. He comes to the United States practically penniless, needing work very, very badly. He comes at a time that the entire United States is plunged in economic distress. Still, he's not living with the economically distressed who are people of color. He's living in a community which kind of makes it him feel that there's a bit of compatibility there. They're all struggling. They're all poor. They're all from someplace else. And they've come to America to seek their fortunes. Well, it got even harder for him. And he moves all the way upstate at the border of Canada, practically, which would have made him a double immigrant. And he sees a way to make a living. And that way, well, he tried barbering. That did not work. But when he got up there, he thought he would join the thousands and thousands of people who moved up there because it was said that it was the second gold rush. And that was a figment of somebody's imagination. By the time the hordes got there to take advantage of the gold rush, the gold was gone. But they still needed to make a living. And he found a way. His way was, according to the article, selling drugs. Hard drugs. His way to make a living was setting up a restaurant, according to the article, setting up a restaurant that specialized in steaks. The steaks being the flesh of horses and mules that just collapsed out of sheer exhaustion and disease. But he was able to put these very delectable steaks on people's tables, customers' tables, in what then became hotels, little hotels that he was able to set up. Except these hotels, according to the paper, no decent woman would be found in these hotels. These hotels actually were whorehouses. And so he was able to make a good living with this organized style of life. And he was able to come back to New York City quite prosperous. But we never hear any discussion of where the prosperity came from. Nor do we hear it conjoined with his status as an immigrant who, by the way, fled Germany because he had no intention of joining the army. although it was the law. So he was a lawbreaker on top of everything else. And with the money he earned in these rather interesting ways, he got into the real estate business in New York City. Now, by the yardstick by which today's immigrants are being measured by Donald Trump and people of his ilk, that person did not belong. His grandfather did not belong here. His grandfather should have been subjected to the Raise Act or some such similar legislation to have him deported, charged, criminally charged, and probably sentenced to a long term in prison. But he became a fine, upstanding citizen and spawned today's current president. Now, in some people's view, his grandfather did the right thing because the pressure to survive was number one. It was the number one imperative. But they also see it in a very interesting way. A white man responding to the pressures to survive as an immigrant is allowed to do things like that. And it becomes an admirable thing. You had people literally dying to just get here so that they can work legitimately. They made the right choice. They obeyed the law. They worked hard. Very often, they were denied the meager incomes that they were supposed to earn. They never made it. So here's Donald Trump, now supported, they just put out a new poll by non-college educated whites who started out this campaign pointing their fingers at immigrants, especially immigrants of color, or people, we would call them white, but in this crazy world, whiteness has different meanings. The whiteness they're talking about is the whiteness of superiority, the whiteness of domination. And that's how we got a Donald Trump, who is now invoking that psychological conditioning to have people accept a new wave of attacks, precisely at a time that the immigrant population has a large population of people of color. It is a threat. And this is the way they're responding to this threat. It would surprise people like Donald Trump to even call up his own immigration authorities and find out what's the deal with immigrants. It may surprise him to know that the most educated immigrant is African. Africans come to this country more educated than any other immigrants, prepared to contribute meaningfully. But Africa has always had one of the tightest controls for legal government-sanctioned immigration. Isn't that odd? I can't tell you how many people I've ridden in cabs that they're driving from Pakistan, from Africa, from really incredible beginnings, but they're driving cabs with PhDs, sometimes more than one. So the same government that has all these rules as to who merits, that's the word now, immigration is to be merit-based. Your own government, your own apparatuses, the figures are there. They're not lying. The most educated immigrant coming to the United States is African. But they're driving cabs when they should be doing brain surgery, when they should be inventing things, when they should be given what they want, which is the opportunity to just go for it. They have all this education. They come prepared to work. They didn't come here prepared to murder people and mug them in the dead of night. That's not what their aim and objective would be. They came to participate meaningfully in a society, and they're prepared. Because at the same time, people are talking about immigration and, you know, what a gift it is. What a remarkable gift it is to be granted the right to emigrate to the United States. And it is that. You get here, before you get here, the blocks are already in your way, impeding your progress, making sure you fail, making sure that whiteness, and I mean this in the political sense, as you know, that whiteness prevails. And in this, they all are in agreement. Trump, what's his name? The guy he beats up all the time, who is a glutton for punishment, his attorney general. You have a whole system predicated on your failure as an immigrant, but on your participation. You are very valuable, though, because your presence here as an immigrant helps to keep a crooked, rotten, racist system going. I mean, where could you get a guy with two PhDs earning his living as a cab driver? I'm not disparaging cab drivers. My father was one. But you see the misapplication of talent and opportunity. And that's exactly what they want. If they can't get it out of you economically, they get it by having you serve as the visible enemy, the visible threat to society as a whole. So even though they know the facts that the immigrant population is highly complex, but you have facts that tell you the people that you are denigrating in order to supply this psychological need. You're making up things to inculcate fear and anger about this. Why do we have these people here? They're better educated than the president and practically all of Congress. You know, in New York City, you jump in a cab And it may very well be a heart surgeon driving in Washington, D.C. You jump in a cab, you have people from all over the African world, all over the Indian world, driving cabs when they should be running things and contributing that way to open this country's shut eyes to what it is missing by being racist. But this is an old, old history. I kind of had a chill when Trump said yesterday that this new act called the Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment Act. Because when you pick the right people, you get them assigned to really good jobs. That's the idea. And if they have great jobs, they'll pay their taxes. They'll be model citizens. You go down to Washington, D.C., you go to New York City, any place, any part of New York City, and you ask them, do you feel you're earning a salary to which you are entitled or should be entitled? No. But Trump said, this legislation is based on the Australian model. And that's when I almost puked. What's good about the Australian model? And if it is based, and this is his, he is swearing this now, he is saying this is what it is. It's based on the Australian model that works so well. Have you ever talked to an Indigenous Australian? Have you ever, talked with an academician, a pretty good or decent historian, to ask, what is Australia's experience with immigration? And by immigration, I mean from the Indigenous point of view. After all, England at the time was the cream of the crop of nations. Why would you go there? And was that immigration? Ask them. Ask any Australian who is still sane about their version of immigration. Back when immigration was supposed to be so important to the country, to the development of the country. Well, let me tell you, by the time they were finished with immigration policies, the indigenous population was about 60,000. That's it. They were killed off. This was not about immigration. This was a race-based method of annihilation. People who would be undesirable in any country ended up in Australia, and by the time they thought that they had accomplished what they came for, there were only 60,000 indigenous people left. You ask any country that was built on immigration, how it turned out. They called it immigration because, well, nobody disputed it. This was the first wave of continuous annihilation of targeted people, people targeted because of this horrible thing called Race Oppression. And we have had the same experience here. Why don't you ask any Native American, any indigenous person in the United States about immigration and the benefits thereof? According to this new bill, the indigenous people should have been enjoying exclusive rights for a long time. After all, this is their country. They have no participation in who comes here, who gets to stay here. They have no say in, quote, immigration laws. They themselves are victims of immigration laws. And they are indigenous. They have their own nations, and they can't even enforce them. So when I hear discussions about immigration, you have to, again, put it in its larger context, and you see what it means in the present time. It actually, eventually, will produce annihilation in service of white domination. That's what it is. I will tell you if you are fit to be here. Okay, that's fair. But wait a minute. Where did you get your authority from? Well, I was elected. Okay, you were elected. But weren't you also indicted? Weren't you also sexually assaulting women? And you are the person who is going to be in charge of judging me and my character? You're on a new drug. You are on a mind-altering new drug. To say this to the nation with a straight face. But they don't care. As long as they get to win the point. And they're winning the point because they have the ability to repeat it often enough. They have a sycophantic media repeating the stupid things that they're saying, which are historically incorrect and legally questionable. And what we will have is a riled up country. And it's natural, people will compute it this way. I'm here working all my life. I'm working hard to meet my obligations to myself and my family. And this chump from some place unknown becomes a citizen like me of this country. There's a lot of psychological warfare going on here. And the people who are raising these issues at this time and in this manner, understand that. And they milk it for all it's got, because what a distraction. This conversation I'm having with you should have been about other things that advance all of us. Here we are stuck talking about primitive conduct and behavior that they continue to hold on to because it's a necessary weapon in their arsenal to keep everybody fighting each other about the wrong thing and no facts. So that's what we need to, every time they come up with something, you know, there is a reason that they're casting it in a particular way. They want a race war in this country, or war of any sort, I mean, Donald Trump has been doing somersaults, wanting a war. Give us a reason to bust somebody's heads, to bomb somebody's country. And this doesn't have to be such a big deal. On their own, countries have been practicing and accepting the reality of immigration for hundreds, in fact, for thousands of years. Immigration was not a big deal. You go to Egypt and you see evidence that a whole bunch of different people were living there and intermarrying and interrelating with each other. There was no big problem here. The country I came from, Trinidad, immigration was, I don't think we ever, ever discussed it. And yet, we had my godfather's Chinese, my brother's godmother's Indian. We have every kind of admixture coming from someplace else for a better life. They found it in Trinidad, and they stayed there. They had children. We all went to all kinds of schools. We had a Muslim school, a Hindu school, a Catholic school, an Anglican school. And we all lived in the same town. No problems. Nobody ever called another person an immigrant. We all are immigrants. We're all living in somebody else's territory, trying to do the best we can to be productive, not create trouble, to see to your family's needs. The United States doesn't understand that way of life at all. It doesn't get that. If they come to live where you live, it is to be understood by you that at any time you can be obliterated. And that gives them great joy. We can live wherever we want. We could do whatever we want. And we can kill you off at any time that we want. Take what we want. Do whatever we want. Everywhere in the world where the European has chosen to, quote, settle, unquote, which means muscle your way in without permission or authority. You take what you want. You do what you want. Because you instantly are the boss. You come in as a hostile presence. You have no intention of getting along with anybody. You have no intention of recognizing and respecting their ways and their values. That's how they're known. That's how Americans are known. And the British, all of the imperialists have bred little imperialists and big ones too. And then they use these kinds of specious arguments. Do you think if you were to add up, let's say for all the time that immigration has existed in the United States, add it all up. How much money they made. All the things that immigrants managed to have. Put a figure on it. And now you do the same for how much they have stolen, how much pain they have caused, how many laws they have broken themselves, and see what the table will look like. I guarantee you that the same people who are in charge of making these laws today, I just told you the genesis of Donald Trump, his massive wealth came from whorehouses and drug dealing. But could you call him out on that? No, you'd be wrong. You'd be sued. But that allowed him, at a very young age, to get $100 million or whatever it is from his father to start his own business. $1 million loan. I over-exaggerated there. But what I'm saying is, look at the reality of the beginnings of the person who is now setting the laws and talking about immigrants in a very nasty way, despite the fact that his grandfather was one. So, I'll take a number of calls if I can. I'll stop right now, take a short break, and you can call 888-874-4888. This is a very important discussion, and it will continue for a while because we will see it play out in a whole bunch of ways you would never expect. We'll come back right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm taking your calls about immigration as Donald Trump and others see it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. It's important to keep these discussions in mind because here's the big surprise. Everybody I'm talking to right now is an immigrant. Everybody. And that's the other thing they argue, is to give us a sense of the us and them. If you're African American or Latino, believe me, you are very much an immigrant in their eyes. We still have not seen a resolution here around that. We still haven't had that. It is to keep some people delusioned about the fact that somehow they have cleaned themselves up and moved to a higher station. But in a political sense, we're all immigrants. Everybody I'm talking to right now. I don't care where you come from. I don't care what your lineage is. You examine it and you will see that you are an immigrant in one way or another. We can't escape it. The only people who are free of that burden are people who have been on this land and in this land since time began. Everybody else is an immigrant in one way or the other. All right. Do we have any calls? I don't see anybody yet. Why we are discussing it in this way is to have you understand what real politics is. It's to get you out of a way of thinking that has been pre-manufactured for you, which ends up shaping your life. It shapes the way you think. It shapes what you do. So that when you fed these non-truths, you too start looking like them. You too start talking like them. You too start thinking like them. And you become a kind of self-guided robot. You know how to respond, which side to take when the issue becomes, you know, large enough for you to take a side. You got to take a side. You have to take the winning side. Well, what is the winning side? Nobody's on my side. That's the winning side. The winning side is my side. I've been asked often enough, well, you're an immigrant, proudly. I'm proudly an immigrant. But why are you here? Because you were there. You were there, my country made it practically impossible for me to continue living a meaningful and productive life in my own country. Of course you're going to have to move around. That is what is called for. It's been happening for centuries. You move in order to meet a need. I didn't come here to rob any banks or to kill anybody. But I certainly do see myself as a world citizen. I should be able, with my credentials being, you know, my education and my willingness to see to my own needs and so forth, and my desire to live harmoniously wherever I go, all these are very creditable characteristics to have. So in that sense, I don't see that it should be anything special that people choose to move around. Go someplace else and experience life there. Because I take my same attitudes, that I'm no different from anybody else. I don't come here to harm you. I come to share my resources. I come to earn a living, whatever it is. But I'm abiding by the law. Therefore, I'm a world citizen. I can go wherever I wish to live. Because I come with the idea of abiding by your laws. Even as I pursue my own agenda. I don't come to change and wreck your country. I don't come to steal your resources. I don't come here to disrespect you. None of that will you see. But that's not the way Britain, the United States, many of the so-called first world countries, that's not their history of conduct and behavior. Well, we've come to the end of the program for today. I hope it made sense to you. And certainly we can pursue it again tomorrow, which is Free Your Mind Friday. I always look forward to that. But think a little bit about this and take a look at how we are all being conditioned to have them start a race war in this country. Again, under the guise that this is to protect the country, a proactive move to protect the country and to, you know, maintain America as the America that we know. The thing is that when you look deeper, you realize that the America we know is a very, very treacherous place. But we see that the formation is gathering, and they are going to now insert or revive these race-based tensions and wars that would only serve to further divide us and not unite us. Thank you for listening today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. a very good program and a very necessary one to expand our minds about what we think we know in this universe. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, plural, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.